Hi, Jim.
Hey, Ann. How you doing?
I'm doing just great. I'm out here in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm Ann Althaus at the University of Wisconsin Law School in the Althaus. I'm the blog Althaus.
Okay,
and
I'm
you are?
Jim Pinkerton, Fox News contributor, former everything in the Reagan and Bush 41 White Houses way back when, and I run a blog called Serious Medicine Strategy on healthcare. But since you mentioned you're in Wisconsin, and since Wisconsin starts with W, that immediately makes me think of another famous W, Anthony Weiner.
Yeah, it's the W blank 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 ER episode of Blogging Head. So you better want to talk about Walker. We better talk about Weiner first, or people might.
Yeah, exactly. We got Weiner, Wisconsin, and Walker, comma S. But let's do. Just yesterday, we're doing this Tuesday morning, and just yesterday, Anthony Weiner had one of the, I think it's fair to say, damnedest press conferences, including a cameo by Andrew Breitbart that I've ever seen. So, did you watch it?
Yeah. Well, you know, you just said Fox News, and I'm going to watch Fox News from now on because I put on CNN when I saw that there was a 4 o'clock news conference. I wanted to see it. And CNN didn't put Breitbart on. They showed a little bit of a few seconds of him speaking. His mouth was moving, but there was no audio. And the talking heads of CNN were just blabbing over it. So they were not following the news that was Andrew Breitbart taking the lectern. So I was really, and then afterwards I looked, all the bloggers were talking about Breitbart, and I felt like, oh, I missed it. Here I was waiting for Weiner to get on, and CNN was just boring me, and I missed the excitement of Andrew Breitbart. So I'm going to watch Fox from now on. CNN
lost
me.
Good for you. I mean, it would almost make you think that CNN was, like, spiking Breitbart.
It was. I'm sorry. Say that again?
I said almost make you think CNN was spiking, to use the famous phrase from the novel of the 70s by Arno de Borgrav about the media spiking anti-Soviet stuff, just not covering it. I mean, obviously the Soviets aren't on it anymore, but the spike still is, apparently. I mean, why wouldn't they? The camera's there, the reporter's there, and they don't use Breitbart, who broke the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Breitbart is just some homeless guy drifting by. He was the source.
And was being a story at that moment. And the drama that Weiner was there waiting to come on, and here was his nemesis, the man who had forced him to come forward and confess. He was right there. He was at the lectern. What a disturbing, poor Anthony Weiner. Sometimes
is that your view, poor Anthony Weiner?
That's my viewpoint of him. I do sometimes.
That's the question. Is that your view, poor Anthony Weiner? Is that your conclusion?
I drift into that. I have this female side. I try to beat it down, but it pops up occasionally.
Well, but you're a law professor. You can analyze this in good legal terms.
Is there anything legal about it? What's legal? I mean,
illegal or illegal?
Well, I don't see. Some people want to drive him out of office, are trying to drum up some kind of something illegal that he used his phone. Like, you can't make personal calls from your office phone. It wasn't like he was raising funds. What's the problem? Aren't you allowed to make personal calls? You call home and ask how your wife is doing. How did the child do at soccer practice? It's just in the category of personal uses of the phone. Who cares? I don't know. Maybe there is some special law. You can never use the office phone for a personal call. That's not the way the office phones if it was a long distance call, I guess he shouldn't be using the office phone.
Maybe there's some kind
of violation there.
Probably some rule about bringing discredit to the house or something. I mean, I suppose you're probably not supposed to bring discredit to the U.S. House, no matter what.
Is that a law? Is there something criminal? Something? I mean, I guess they could. You know, are we going to start denouncing people officially from Congress because they engage in bad sexual behavior? It's just sex, as they said back in the Clinton era. Until you start, and even lying. Yeah, well. You're not lying. He didn't lie under oath, did he? He only lied to a bunch of reporters.
No. I mean, this is sort of the, you know, we've got Bill Clinton, who made the exact same defense. This doesn't affect my voting rate. I mean, I am reminded of what Aristotle said about persuasion, which again is not a legal concept. He said, persuasion consists of ethos, pathos, and logos. logos being the logic of the argument, pathos being, you know, use of emotion, and ethos being the character of the person involved, and you got to trust them so that's not, you know, they're not just an actor. I guess that's not a legal concept. I guess that's for the voters of Wisconsin to decide. I mean, there's certainly a precedent in the guy from New York State, Chris Lee, who was gone by now in the Chris Lee saga. You know, he'd been gone for a, you know, I guess the photos didn't come out. Well, depends on which. The photo that was clearly Chris Lee came out immediately, the one with the shirt off, and you can see his face, and so you knew it was him. I think by now we have photos that are clearly Wiener, you know, and of course he's admitted to the original crotch shot.
Right. And there's an additional photo that Breitbart is holding back that probably is naked, as opposed to the gray underpants that we know and love now.
Well, I suspect he will leave.
But, you know, Lee, because it came out so quickly with Lee, Lee didn't have that whole phase where he lied to everybody. So in that sense, what Wiener did was worse. But why did Lee, it was Lee's own decision to leave. Ironically, the Democrats didn't get adequately to revel in the replacement of Lee with a Democrat because this Wiener thing popped up, as they say, as I like to say. But I'm just going to try to make you laugh. But the thing about when a Republican does something sexual, if he's been a social conservative, if he's been flaunting his marriage and his traditional values, he's got a bigger price to pay if he's been sexually bad. But did anyone really have a high sex behavior standard of Anthony Wiener? How old was he, like, when he got married? Wasn't he about 45 or something like that?
Yeah, he's in there somewhere.
This is like a glamour power couple. He was 45 when he got married. He had never been married before. Didn't Huma know what she was getting into? I mean, it seems to me they were married by Bill Clinton. Isn't this a kind of a show glamour couple? I mean, the embarrassment is that he didn't conduct his activities secretly enough, so that kind of ruins the public image of the power couple. But privately, who really cares? I mean, maybe it was all understood. You know, I was reading this article in the New York Post about how Wiener was doing these things when Huma was off traveling the world, as she often has to do, being the body woman of Hillary Clinton. Talking to Hillary Clinton about who knows what.
She's
a woman of the world.
As if having your wedding officiated by Bill Clinton wasn't enough of an augury of what was going to happen.
Yeah. But also, it's a signal that perhaps these are sophisticated people who have, views about private sexual morality that doesn't really match middle America. You're supposed to be
What's more sophisticated than what Wiener is up to? What could be more sophisticated than that?
Oh, the man is Well, he's using social media. I loved it. I was going back and rewatching this interview that he did with the ABC reporter Jonathan Carl. It's really very funny to watch it now because, you know, he's being very arrogant and schooling Jonathan Carl on what good journalism is and how you need to understand social media, right? Like, well, he's ahead of the reporters don't really get Twitter.
Right. What reporter with a job today, which is distinct from the reporters who don't have jobs, is not pretty personal. But you wrote you're a learned person. You wrote a learned post on this recently for, I believe, AnnAldhouse.com.
I wrote a learned post?
Didn't you? I thought you did.
Well, I wrote a lot of posts, but I don't know if any of them were particularly learned.
Well, that'll teach me to give you a plug. Okay, fine. Maybe you wrote a bad post. I don't know. Tell me.
I've written so many posts. More posts than don't push me. Anyway, what would you like to talk about with respect? Does he need to resign, do you think? And do they need to get divorced, I guess, are the big issues.
I think on the usual test they make on these things is, you know, was the wife standing by him?
Mm-hmm.
And, Elizabeth, Silda
Spitzer,
Spitzer was there, mm-hmm. and Mrs. Vitter was there.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton was sort of, sort of there. They walked out of the helicopter. You remember that together.
Hillary Clinton had an earlier phase during the original election, I guess it was 1992, where she you know, the Jennifer Flowers material came out about, and I think Hillary Clinton made a big point of saying, and specifically referencing the Tammy Wynette song, Stand By Your Man, I'm not just a Tammy Wynette Stand By Your Man. In other words, I'm not like you little people, you middle American types who just stand by your man because you're actually committed to traditional marriage. I'm a sophisticated woman, and I knew what I was doing. I wasn't just doing it out of traditional values. I was doing it out of some more elaborate calculations and
about being in the White House and being a future president and stuff. Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny how that that quote from the 60 Minutes episode of Stand By Your Man is now, mm-hmm. of course, reporters took it as a huge, really cool, because not only was she defending Clinton, but she was also sort of dismissing, you know, country and Western white working class culture in the same breath, which, of course, reporters loved. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't particularly think that quote helped. I mean, it obviously standing by her man back in '82 helped Clinton a lot. But the function of standing by her man, the quote dissing Tammy Wynette mm-hmm. hurt her. But of course, again, this was sort of in the pre Fox News, pre Rush Limbaugh era. Mm-hmm. There wasn't as much media blowback on that as there would have been now. And, of course, reporters only remember the positive, when, in fact, it was something of a negative. Again, that'll be the big get with to my knowledge, I mean, Huma is not, you know, who I've never met. I mean, I certainly wasn't in those sophisticated circles. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware. She did one magazine spread, I think, for Vogue.
Vogue, yes.
Which shows she's got a little bit of a ego and so on, but on the whole, I've never seen her. I don't think she's ever done any interviews, at least not on the record.
And yeah, so, I think being sort of the second, behind Hillary, the way she is, being subtle, and I mean, people look at her and say, "Oh, she's beautiful. She's this mystery woman." That was her mystique. So it was kind of partly about being seen, but not being someone that you could talk to. That was very mysterious, you know.
So now the question is, as Barbara Walters and Diane Sawyer and Katie Couric and Oprah and whoever claw all over each other to get the first interview with her, it will be interesting to see where, if anywhere, she puts her chips down on this.
Yeah. You know, another character that it's worth likening her to is Maria Shriver, who, when Arnold Schwarzenegger was still in his upward rise, as they say, toward the governorship, he got hit with a lot of stories about women. See, I get to do that because I'm a woman. I can say things like that, I think.
Yeah, see, if I said it, I could be sued for sex harassment or something.
I have to take the liberties I can get. But so when he was trying to win the governorship, she stood by him when these stories about his behavior with women came out, and she vouched for him because at that point she was still on the upward trajectory with him. Now, maybe she didn't know. Maybe she really believed he was good. But I think they were another glamorous power couple. And then later, now she's had to leave him because I guess he crossed some line by having a child with another woman. I think that really does, there's a line that everyone has. And that was a key line. Another line was he stopped being governor. So there was nowhere else to go. He can't be president because he wasn't a natural born citizen. So,
No more state dinners at the White House. Yeah, for the Governors Association and so on.
Now I think. What did you think of Wiener's presentation yesterday? When he was finally able to get Breitbart to leave.
I did note to myself last week was. About last Thursday's Washington Post had a article by, I just happen to remember, Karen Tumulty and Felicia Sanmez, where Wiener was still in denial mode, sort of a little bit of catch me if you can, I think even then. And it quoted Wiener as running up to, speaking of Wisconsin, Paul Ryan, the congressman from the Badger State, and saying gleefully, this is Wiener talking, "Hey, Ryan, I have more Twitter followers than you do." And then at the end of the article, it said, so as soon as this 9-hour interview session was over, I guess it must have been last Wednesday, the 9 hours, that is, where all these denials, all these sort of more or less denials, the article quoted, cited Wiener, pointing down to his BlackBerry and starting to tweet again. You know, okay, how's H-O-Z, you know, sort of the slang way of saying, you know, using an S now. How's about me getting back in the game? Well, I mean, getting back in the game might mean back to tweeting out, you know, digs at Republicans or, you know, whatever. Of course, now that we know the real game that Wiener was sort of perhaps most interested in, I mean, for all we know, he was tweeting one of his sort of, you know, pseudo long distance girlfriends. At that point, I thought to myself, gee, this man is so in love with fame and love with the principle of spell the name right. He has lost his ability to distinguish between good publicity, bad publicity, and career-killing publicity. And to him, they're sort of all the same. And so I think that, you know, I mean, he is, media critics who, you know, like to, you know, stroke their chins about these, you know, big issues of fame and, you know, you think of Leo Brody's book, The Frenzy of Renown, and so on, you know, going back to the ancient times. There's nothing quite like what we have now in terms of your ability to turn, you know, celebrity into and notoriety into money and so on. And one wonders whether Wiener's real ultimate fate is to, you know, be a sort of a pop culture figure, you know, and if he's sort of still famous and notorious, you know, 10, 20 years from now, and sort of becomes a, you know, I mean, the usual joke is your name becomes a verb. Well, you know, or, you know, Wiener.
His name was always a noun.
But if he gets Wiener and, you know, all the other million puns that I'm sure you alone, Anne, will come up with. he might have actually be thinking himself in a completely perverse way, mission accomplished.
I just don't see where he can go from here. I mean, he wanted to be mayor of New York. Do you know that New York State is losing to congressional districts? And, you know, the Democratic Party may, where did I read this somewhere today, that they, maybe the New York Times, that they're, you know, they could conveniently lose his district.
Yeah, that'd be tough, though, because I think it might be the only Jewish district left in Brooklyn. I might be mistaken about that. I think
there's like a combining of Brooklyn and a little bit of Queens and Long Island. And so those have been two. They're going to be consolidated into one. You know, he can be.
Yeah, but they might. I mean, they might. I mean, it was certainly, you know, rid them of this troublesome.
If they want to get rid of him.
Congressman. Yeah, exactly. If he won't resign or not run again.
Well, do you think he should resign? Do you think that he has some reason? I don't see why he should resign. I mean, I don't think Elliot Spitzer should have resigned. Well, Elliot Spitzer had a different kind of a situation. There's the Chris Lee problem where you're a social conservative. There's the Elliot Spitzer problem where you've been a big, tough law and order person and you've put prostitutes in prison and then you can't, you know, use it. There's the big hypocrisy plus the criminal violation. But just sexual misbehavior. Are we really going to say he needs to resign? And don't you think there are an awful lot of men out there who are really sweating over what's in their Facebook and Twitter history? Don't you think there are a lot of women with pictures and sexts?
Yeah, there probably are. I mean, look, it's sort of hard to imagine that a prediction about, you know, the careless one click away from your own doom. Cliche about Twitter and Facebook and so on is sort of proven true. I mean, you know, look, it used to be you have to get on TV and say something stupid, you know, like, you know, or racist or nasty or something. You know, we can all think of examples going back to, you know, Marv Albert and I've forgotten who else, the Al Campanis and, you know, so on. And then you could tweet your way to destruction like Gilbert Gottfried, you know, got himself fired as the spokesperson for the spokes duck for AFLAC.
Or you could say, like George Allen, you can get YouTube. You say something
in a private
YouTube, group,
exactly, right.
And you say one thing, and that one thing will be viral, would become viral video, 2 seconds of disaster, and that's the end of your career.
Right, that's
but
the end of your
career. Sex should end a career unless you've got someone with criminal sexual behavior, which there is a little bit of an issue whether some of these girls were underage. That would be a different matter. But if it's not criminal sexual behavior and you haven't been a big traditional values, now that you're and come out as a hypocrite at this point, if it's just, adultery and sexting and all of this stuff that I think a lot of extroverted, narcissistic, powerful men do, I mean, why go into politics? That may be part of their goal. I was the nerd in high school and now I can get women because I'm a member of I think there are a lot of people like that. And I don't think we should lose their services. I mean, I think a lot of people who have that psychological profile are going to sexually misbehave in ways that involve adults and are not criminal. I don't think we should start down the road of rejecting all of those people, or we'll lose some of our most dynamic, manly politicians.
Well, you might. I mean, I guess I would put myself in the category of, you know, I wouldn't vote for him, but I probably wouldn't have voted for him before.
Wouldn't have voted for him anyway.
Yeah, I know exactly. He probably didn't lose net. He probably didn't lose anything with me on this. I mean, I am curious on the under. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are laws about this. You know, if you're sexting, to use that new phrase, and underage girls, is that a crime?
I don't know. I mean, if you don't know, people pretend to be something other than what they are. I mean, a lot of people are, there are stings where FBI agents pretend to be children, and then you establish that the person knew it was a child. So, but that's the other way around. That's how you catch predators. I don't think that he thought he was contacting. He did go after the young women, but they were above the age of consent.
Yeah, I mean, nobody, I certainly know tons of friends, children who are way underage, or who just simply lie and put down a birth date, you know, that makes, I think the cutoff is 13 or 16 on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I certainly know plenty of people younger than that who are using it, mm-hmm. but not to rat anybody out here. well, that is I guess somebody, you know, the sergeant at arms of the house or something is going to feel duty bound. I mean, the ethics committee is going to say, okay, look, let's just figure out all these people that you contacted to see if any of them are underage. I also wonder, does a parent have a right to sue Wiener now over him taking up, you know, on the internet with their child?
Well, we'll see what happens if there are children, but I think there are an awful lot of people talking to other people on the internet, and a lot of people lying about their age. Is every man that's gotten involved in sexual chats with people that he thinks are adults, is he vulnerable to being, do you really want to go down that road? I mean, I think that that's a witch hunt.
Yeah, I kind of agree, frankly, but I'm just saying I think this is a case where, you know, everybody's speeding down the highway and the cop stops you and you say, look, I was going the exact same over the speed limit speed as everybody else, and how come I'm getting nailed? And the answer is because you are.
I know a lot of young people here in Madison, Wisconsin, who are involved in the protests. We have this Walkerville tent city up at the Capitol now. People inculcate their children in politics at a very early age. Okay, so let's get some hyper-political 15-year-old girl who hates whatever politician. Try to get him to follow her on Facebook or Twitter, or friend her on Facebook. Push to try to get a sexual discussion going, and then send that to the potential for dirty tricks done by real teenagers is, okay, kids, go ahead. I gave you the idea. I don't want to be in a conspiracy. I don't think you should really do that, but I think that there are a lot of political kids of 15 and 16, 17-year-old age. You could bring down any politician you want. Who is at all susceptible to that, and aren't men's, maybe some women are susceptible to that, but I think there's a real vulnerability. I mean, take all the men who are already on the internet looking for women in the form of pornography. My understanding is an awful lot of men are doing that. Now, maybe a man that wouldn't go out and actually do something physical with a woman as who isn't his wife, as Wiener said he has never done, might feel that it's a subtle shading from the pursuit of pornography online and getting off on some woman who's not your wife, who is a porn model, to looking for other women that look pretty, and then look, you can text them. And then they might text you back, and you're a member of Congress. And, where is that line? Where is that shading? And I think a lot of men are already going down that road. Well, it'll be interesting to see how strong the reaction is to Wiener, considering that I think there are a lot of men out there who, if they haven't already done it, will do it in the future. And the Internet is just not going to be as much fun as it used to be for people now that they have this. Well, at least Wiener set the example, and everyone can learn. It's a little cautionary tale for all you men who might wander beyond the pornography to actually trying to contact a real woman.
Well, I think these are all good points, and I admittedly kind of creepy and kind of scary, and no doubt be the subject of any number of thoughtful seminars at, you know, the Berkman Center at Harvard for Internet Studies and whoever else.
Right.
I'm also reminded of what Julian Assange of WikiLeaks fame said not long ago, that Facebook was the greatest spying operation ever.
The worst
that the government ever imagined, is nothing compared to the kind of comprehensivity. I think about a movie like the one the Oscar a couple of years ago, The Lives of Others, about the East German spy operation and so on. The East German had 10% of the population's working full-time spying and the other 90%. The most diligent spy with all the wiretaps in the world couldn't find out as much stuff about you.
Mention should be made of Apple's cloud announcement yesterday. So I've had this long-running discussion with Bob Wright on the subject of whether we should worry about private entities who do things having to do with the invasion of privacy and the violation of free speech as opposed to just the government. The East German matter involved what the government did. But, private corporations who are giving us good things that we love are actually enticing us to voluntarily, carry around GPS devices and put all our love letters where they can access them. And we're just following our own pursuit of pleasure.
Now, you weren't saying anything bad about the Apple, were you?
Apple just announced its new cloud. Did you see?
I know about the iCloud. Thank you very much. I'm just saying I put Apple in a different category from all other companies.
But see, that's the thing. And also Google, Google, don't be evil, right? They inspire this love, but isn't that like Big Brother? You love Big Brother. You love Apple.
I do love that.
It's
I do
the inspiration
love Apple.
I
think in fairness to Apple, the cloud, I mean, their cloud, the iCloud, which just was announced yesterday, is mostly for music and stuff. I mean, I guess if Big Brother wants to find out what you're listening to, I guess that's
This can also be your email and all your letters, all your documents. Your computer itself isn't going to need a memory anymore. It'll all be
that's
out
true.
There
you're
in
right. It's well. Anyway, I fair enough. So you're saying that the cloud, the Apple cloud, goes in there with Google and Yahoo and Hotmail and whoever else.
In traditional religion, people think that God is watching everything that they do and knows all. And maybe they pictured God behind a cloud or up in a cloud, the cloud of unknowing, something like that. Right now we have the cloud. It's just Apple, and all your stuff is the cloud knows all. Apple is gone.
Well, this
and
I
God
I,
loves
can,
you,
I,
you know?
I agree. This is going to have to get wrestled with, but. All right. I have no more thoughts on Wiener.
Oh, I have one more thing I'd like to say about Wiener, and that is that I thought that the actual apology was good. It wasn't a non-apology. He did take full responsibility, and I particularly like that he didn't say that he had a sex addiction and would seek treatment, which I think is such a lame excuse. He said there was no outside force causing him to do it, no drugs, no drink. It was fully him. We don't know if it was fully him. There was that Howard Stern question from the audience, if you know what I mean.
No, I don't. I'm not trying to draw you out here, but I don't know.
You don't know what the prank question was? That he was asked at the press conference?
No.
Should I say it?
Sure. I mean, it's blogging heads, free speech.
In a reference to the gray underpants picture, were you fully erect?
Oh. What did he say? I'm sorry.
Were you fully erect? Was the question?
What was Wiener's answer?
Oh, that's when he walked off. When the Howard Stern character was starting to ask, pretending to be a reporter, they're shouting out these questions, and now the questions become very rude. Another one of the questions was, "Will you support Arnold Schwarzenegger's love child?" So they were turning it into a comic thing. I liked that he took full responsibility for it. He didn't say he had a sex addiction. Maybe there were some lies in there too, but I think he did a good job of really just providing the relief of confessing all. I think that's the best way to go. But he only did it because he had to. So.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Okay, all right, so... if it weren't, if somebody made, I think it was Hank Stuver in the Washington Post this morning made the point that you know, 5 Americans were killed in Iraq, and mm-hmm. You know, and yet, you know, the various cable news shows could find little or no time to deal with that, which is, again, kind of tragic and horrible and so on.
Well, what CNN wanted to talk about was how Sarah Palin might have misstated what Paul Revere did. they were so ready to go with that, and then they didn't have room for it.
Yeah, which is a whole little industry. I'm no expert on American Revolutionary history. I did see Joel Miller in National Review who apparently has written a book about Paul Revere's ride, sort of scratching his head and saying, look, you know, he was actually kind of sympathetic, but people get things garbled. But I found most interesting, though, speaking of all these sort of cyber issues, was the allegation that Palin supporters were getting on Wikipedia to change the Wikipedia entries about. I think I find that kind of 1984 memory hole, ish. There's a scene in the movie Rollerball from about mm-hmm. 1970. James Caan and John Houseman, I think, and mm-hmm. they're going to some laboratory. This is set way in the future, sort of dystopia, and it's set way in the future. And so they're going through this laboratory, and some old sort of lab technician, some famous British actor, I've sort of forgotten who it was, but you know, one of the endless number of Shakespeare-ish type mm-hmm. British actors who would slum their way through Hollywood to make some money. And he knocks over some jar with some part of the computer, and the jar goes crashing down on the floor and smashes. And the guy says, well, there goes the 14th century, you know, nothing but, you know, Dante and a few corrupt popes. And so, you know, no great loss. And so the idea that you can, you know, Wikipedia to me is a great resource, and I probably find myself checking it, you know, for something, you know, 10 times a day. But fair warning, folks, on Paul Revere, even as we speak, it's being cyber warred back and forth somewhere.
Well, what I thought was funny, to go back to old media, was that the people were being so, mocking of Sarah Palin, acting like they're so smart. They were saying, everybody knows what Paul Revere did, and they meant everybody knows the Henry Wadsworth Longfellow poem.
Right, and it is a complicated story. It's a little unclear. I won't say it's unclear. It's just a little more complicated, than that. And And Wisconsin is a major focal point of political strife.
Yeah.
You and I have never talked about this. What do you make of all what's going on with Governor Scott W. Walker?
Well, we've been visiting the protests ever since February 11th. It's been just a spiraling, ongoing matter, and it doesn't end. Just this weekend, they started a... They call it Walkerville. It's supposed to recollect Hooverville. It was a lot of young people from around the state. And the funny thing is, I got a lot of pictures of it, but the tents are all these, like, they look like practically brand new $300 tents from REI or something like that. So it looks like a kind of a wholesome camp out. But they're up here on the square in front of businesses. So a lot of the tents are set up right next to a restaurant outdoor that has an outdoor cafe. And you'll see these sort of sedate-looking people eating their dinner with little candles on the table and glasses of wine and so forth. And right next to them are these people in tents on the street. Meanwhile, there's a homeless shelter in the church on the square where the actual homeless people go and are indoors at night. I don't know where the line is between being a protester and having some other reason to need to sleep on the street. There are a lot of ironies to that. But the other thing that I think the tent city is that's going on right now is pretty sedate. But the new effort is to really just break up these legislative hearings, you know, to have people sequentially stand up and start yelling when the legislators are trying to conduct a hearing. And then that person will be dragged out by the police and arrested. And then another person will get up, and these people are, you know, being civilly disobedient, and they're sacrificing themselves. And then yesterday, you know, there's two points of entry where you have to go through security screening. You have to go through a metal detector. That's a security provision. And the protesters, a lot of them don't think that that's legitimate or even legal. There's an argument that it violates some access requirements in the state constitution. And when a couple of credentialed reporters had access to a side door, another door that didn't go through security yesterday, there was some well, I don't know exactly what went on, but it seemed like they were letting in like 30 or 40 other people along with them. And then the police started arresting the reporter, and then the crowd was chanting around them saying, why are you arresting them? You shouldn't arrest them. And this is excessive force. And, you know, so the police are completely being, you know, harassed by the crowd, as by a crowd of people that is bypassing security by going in a door that they're not supposed to go on. And, of course, they're all taking video. So the video of the police brutality with all the protesters yelling at them is on YouTube. Meanwhile, back during February and March, when the protests were going on, the Capitol Police had a policy of pretty much kind of not resisting the protesters and allowing them to come in and backing off. And so they were very tolerant, to the point where I have video of protesters saying the police are on our side and so forth like that. So there was a policy to not produce this resistance that would look bad on camera, but to kind of facilitate or tolerate the protests that went on for months. And now it's changed. They've got security on the building, but people are still trying to get into the building to disrupt the legislative hearings. And the police, suddenly these police who were so tolerant all of that time back last winter are treated as if, you know, they're just the pigs, you know.
Wow.
It's pretty awful. But they just feel, I mean, there's this sense that this is like the civil rights movement. And that we should be resisting the government, that, you know, Scott Walker is evil and the Republicans who control both houses of the legislature here are evil, and we need to resist evil any way we can. I mean, I've seen endless posters portraying Scott Walker as Hitler. I've gone up to people holding those posters and asked them, did they mean to compare Scott Walker to Hitler? And they would very seriously tell me that they absolutely did. And then it was an appropriate comparison. I have so much stuff, like, so far beyond anything the Tea Party did, that it's just absurd.
Well, you know, I mean, the old joke about, you know, all internet, was it Godkin's Law or something, all internet conversations eventually devolve into, you know, you're Hitler, you're a Nazi. I guess it's not limited to the internet, I guess. In the end, I guess, you know, who can resist, you know, calling your person, you know, Hitler and so on.
I thought the Godwin rule was that once that happens, really the conversation is over, and basically, so that's the Godwin rule. You know, you brought in Hitler. Don't bring in Hitler. If you want this to be a conversation, don't bring up Hitler. Don't make the Hitler comparison. Otherwise,
okay,
we don't have any conversation.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess that begs the question that, I mean, in what would be called, for lack of a better term, the real world, as opposed to the internet, I guess. It's not as if the protesters and the pro-Walker and anti-Walker people, not as if they're really interested in having a conversation, right? So I guess there's no conversation occurring between Americans.
And that's something we tried to raise with people when I and my husband went in and were interviewing people. There was a lot of chanting and a lot of beating on drums. And so you can't have a conversation when people are just going, shame, 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 or whose house, our house. They'd be in the rotunda of the Capitol going, whose house, our house. Now, they lost the election the previous fall. So, I mean, and then another one was, this is what democracy looks like. And it was a chant. So you can't have a conversation with people who are chanting and beating on drums. But also they're saying this is democracy because they're there and it's their house. But they lost the election last fall.
An imperfect understanding of political science is, you know, always to be cured. I mean, I can remember, you know, back in Iraq, and Bush and Rumsfeld would say protests and even looting, this is what democracy looks like, this is what freedom looks like. Well, no, it's not at all what the founding fathers or any other student of, you know, legitimate student of political science would understand, you know, about order and civility and all that stuff. There's other elements to democracy than your right to protest. I agree, but again, we've gotten a very sloppy understanding of you know, rights and responsibilities. I would say maybe more people need to go to law school, but I'm not sure that's the answer.
Well, I do think that part of a democratic system is free speech, and should be dialogue in some ways that people try to persuade other people. But I think if it devolves into people intimidating other people and trying to get a sense that there's only one right way to think and we're going to bully you otherwise, for example, boycotting stores that won't display a sign saying we support the workers and so forth. Or, I mean, I got threats on the internet of people who said they were going to run me and my husband out of town because we don't belong in Madison, because we don't share the right kind of thinking that this is a town where people agree. And I don't think that's democratic. I mean, the idea that there's a free speech component to democracy that includes protests, that includes dissent, I think that is important. But at some point, the people who are protesting are really just trying to intimidate or trying to convey the message that there's only one way to think and, you know, it's our way or you will pay. And we're going to just gradually crank up the resistance until you back down. But, you know, it hasn't really worked because they kept it up for 2 months during the winter. And now what they're trying to do, they're having to disrupt and they're not getting the same cooperation from the police. And because of the way the access to the Capitol has been restricted, they're switching to some things that I think just seem so disorderly that, the police have to respond to that. Police cut off the access and have a security point, you can't run around. I mean, at the airport, try running around the security checkpoint at the airport. What will happen to you? Oh, I'm sorry, man. Right, hurry. Right, I'm just going to run around. You can't do that.
No, you can't do that. I agree. How's this playing in the larger screen of Wisconsin public opinion? And how about these recall elections coming up?
Well, there's six, there were petitions filed for 3 Republicans and 6 Democrats. And the institution that does the processing, the Government Accountability Commission or Board, I think it's called, they approved all 6 of the Democratic recall, the recalls of Republicans. In other words, the petitions filed by Democrats to recall Republicans. There's 6 of them, and they're all going up for recall elections. They have to there has to be an opponent. You know, the election is, will this opponent beat the person who is being recalled? It's not a vote just yes or no, let's recall this person and then have an election. It's just the election. So there has to be an actual opponent. Anyway, 6 of those have been approved. So those are going forward. And then the 3 that Republicans filed on to recall Democrats, those are still in processing and those are being delayed. And so there's some kind of discussion about whether that was fair. But the Democrats filed a lot of affidavits saying, challenging the signatures. You know, there could be a lot of, speaking of dirty tricks, one dirty trick is to be a Democrat. You sign the petition that you want to fail, and you sign it in a way that, makes your signature bad, and then that sets up an argument. The whole petition should be thrown out because of all of these flaws. So there's a lot of wrangling like that. But there was a Supreme Court election, too, and there was a lot of effort was put behind this candidate, Joanne Kloppenburg, who it's nonpartisan, technically, election, but she was the one supported by the protesters and the Democrats. And Prosser, the incumbent, who was supported by Republicans, won by like 7,000 votes, but that dragged on and on. So that disappointment when Kloppenburg didn't win was some indication of what the people of Wisconsin actually think. But then it's on to the next thing. There's always, these people are community organizers. You know, they always have another thing. It's the tent city. It's the disruption of the hearings now. And it's the recall elections. And, these people are really passionate. They're really dedicated. If this doesn't work, there's something else. There are battles in the court. They're just working on many fronts all of the time.
Yeah, no, the law was a collective bargaining law thrown out. Did I have that right?
There was a 5.5-hour oral argument in the Wisconsin Supreme Court yesterday. It might have been the longest oral argument in Supreme Court history. I don't know how they went on that long. There was a trial-level judge here in Madison, in Dane County, who enjoined the publication of the law. So on the ground that it violated the Wisconsin Open Meetings Law. That was the ground that it... So this whole legislation has been held up on this open records, open meetings law ground by a local Madison judge, where, of course, you know what the politics in Madison are. And then people the rest of the state, I don't know how they're responding to that, but there was an argument yesterday in the Wisconsin Supreme Court about whether to hear that case. And, of course, because Prosser won the election, that means that the balance on the court tips conservative at this point. It's unclear what that court is going to do. So technically it is the repeal of the cutback of some of the collective bargaining rights. has been enjoined by this local judge. That might be changed by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And then meanwhile, you know, the Republicans still have their majority in the legislature. And they have to worry that they might lose it because of the recall. So that's why they're pushing things through. And that's why the protesters are trying to keep things from happening. Just delay. You know, they're digging
right.
in.
They could pass it again, couldn't they? I mean, if they had to, they could. I mean,
they are trying to do that now.
Until they lose their majority, they could right, pass
right.
it again.
Right, and that's going to happen next month if the recalls against at least three of the Republicans succeed. Then they'll be able to take the majority in the Senate. So anything that needs to be done with the two-house majority needs to be done quickly because the recalls are looming. So everybody's really cranked up over this, and people are getting themselves arrested every day now, and they're breaching the security in the Capitol and so forth. It's actually really hot, and it's also like the long hot summer. It's really hot here this week. People are
okay. I suppose if it's hot there, it's probably also hot in Illinois and not Illinois, Ohio and Michigan and wherever. There's another state that's sort of in this pot of Republican governors. Florida, which I'm sure if it's hot in Wisconsin, I'm sure it's hot in Florida. This is
good occasion to stay in with your air conditioning.
Yeah, right. Unless you're really committed to.
But if you're living in a tent. You see these people
Unless
living
you're in a tent where it's cool, and
it's
especially
cool
if it's one of those fabrics that breathes and so on because your parents paid for it, I guess it might not be too bad.
I think it's pretty bad. You know, it feels like 100 level now, and people are living outdoors in their tents. Or at least the tents are there. Maybe they leave the tents and they go sleep somewhere air-conditioned, and it just looks like they're staying in it. How do you know? It's just a tent. I don't know. So how does it look to – I'm interested in how it looks from where you are. People here notice it. It's a big deal. But there was an idea that this was get rolling and this movement would go forward into lots of other states.
I think that – I mean, it's – the Republicans, like stipulating that, you know, taxes are too high and spending is too high and that, you know, these Republicans, including Scott Walker, were elected to do pretty much what they're doing. I do wonder whether sort of optically they crossed a line with swing voters on the collective bargaining rights thing. You live here in D.C. where the federal workforce has not only civil service but also unions, and you see firsthand that, you know, it's in your contract, you can watch television at your desk, you get these crazy flex times. It means you come in at, you know, 6 a.m. and leave at 2 p.m. And of course, for the first 3 hours from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., nobody really knows if you're there or not, and so on. So, the idea that the federal government is and the government in general does a bad job of what it's been designated to do, in part because the workforce just isn't terribly flexible or interested or motivated or. Yeah, and at the same time, good workers don't feel rewarded for being good workers. They figure, you know, if the union is really dedicated to protecting the bad workers, then why bother being a good worker? I mean, it's kind of demoralizing to be in a place where, you know, everybody else is goofing off. I think there's a lot of realization about that. On the other hand, you know, the middle class has its own set of values that I'm not sure that ideologues on the left or the right fully comprehend where sort of the average American is coming from, which is why you get these miscalculations. About the sense of from the Democrats' point of view, how the stimulus worked, or Republicans about collective bargaining. There's certain things that ordinary people kind of like, and if they feel they're being taken away, they rebel. And this is sort of a point that hit me, years ago reading E.P. Thompson's The Making of the English Working Class. Mm-hmm. It's a book written about 1963. By a certified, at least then, Marxist, who's now passed away, but I mean, you know, right in the early 60s, you know, certainly a communist, and he did his best to kind of argue about the emergence of class consciousness in England in the 19th century and so on, and so he clearly had his own kind of to the Finland Station-ish, narrative in mind, as he was doing this. But he also was a good enough historian. He said, you know, look, my purpose here is to save the past from the condescension of the present. Kind of a famous quote. As in, I'm not simply going to try and overlay my mid 20th century thoughts about what people were thinking in the 19th century. So I'm going to bring in, you know, all these characters, you know, that are, you know, like Joanna Southcott comes to mind. She was a sort of a divine of that era, the sort of the Amy Semple McPherson of her time, mm-hmm. the Gordon riots from 1780, you know, were anti-Catholic. So he brought in all these sort of working class movements, some of which he admired, some of which he didn't. But all of which just said, look, this is a complicated picture of what the English working class wanted. They wanted stuff that communists like, and they wanted stuff that, you know, Catholic bashers liked. I mean, you know, not to approve of that in any way, just sort of, in other words, you know, mm-hmm. it was complicated and different and eclectic, and that's the way history is, and that's the way movements are, and, you know, it's easy to sit in Washington or some elite university and, you know, or just, you know, on the coast or something like that and never really actually meet anybody who lives in Racine or Eau Claire or something and what they actually think about these issues. And so I guess it's sort of a head scratcher to everybody here. Do you mean those people really have views that don't quite fit the neat template that either party has tries to impose on them?
Yeah.
Hello?
I'm still here.
Okay, yeah, you're just waiting on me for a second there. Anyway. That's a little bit of a, you know.
I think in Wisconsin, people seem to be very polarized, though. This idea that there are a lot of people in the middle who have a little of each. I think people around here seem to be either, I just saw a poll the other day that showed that the favorability gap is greater for Scott Walker than for any other governor. The only other governor.
Right. I don't think they are polarized. I think they're polarized, but mostly anti-Walker. I think that's the problem, is that the swing, there are no swing voters. I kind of agree. They're one way or the other. And the polls I see, at least that make it to the East Coast, show a pretty heavy polarization against him.
Yeah. I mean, I consider myself a swing voter. I find the extremes of both parties scare me. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in the next presidential election. I mean, some of the stuff that Paul Ryan talks about just scares me.
I've written a lot about that, and again, I put that in the category of, the middle class wants certain things, and they don't necessarily fall into the categories of what people do. I mean, you know, I don't think they want, you know, Obamacare, and I don't think they want Ryan either. But that's another W. Wisconsin in Washington is another story, but. And we should probably quit while we're ahead with Wiener and UW and Walker, I guess. And
WWW, it represents the internet, the web.
W's the W's.
The Worldwide Wiener.
Worldwide Wisconsin. Worldwide Wiener. Okay. All right. Thanks, Anne. Thanks, everyone, for watching.
Thank you.
And until next time. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.